the amount and dimension of the speed. Speed itself is meaningless. We are always talking about speed of development or spatial speed or something like that, but there is also a kind of mental speed. The fastest people during the last millenniums have been the people which have been 100 years or maybe 1,000 years ahead of the development. It becomes dangerous when the physical development is faster than the mental development. This is one of the problems. Speed means, when we are dealing with cities or with the transport system, the amount of information we can perceive, we can digest, and we can react on. Reacting on as an individual and reacting on as a social system. And the whole discussion in New York, like here, was dealing how can we adapt the society to the technical, to the speed of the technical evolution. This was one of our main discussion points, and we have tried to figure it out from the different points of view. And what we don't like to accept during the last 200 years is that we have to recognize that our abilities concerning responsible handling of speed is related to our human evolutionary limits. During the last 200 years, we had the opportunity to create in the physical world by using huge amounts of external energy for effortless speed. This is the miracle of the society of today, because the speed, we don't pay the right price for the speed. So we have a very high speed, and we have created an indicator which is speeding us up. This is the GDP, because the GDP is a scale which measures the throughput. It measures what goes in and what goes through the system, but not what is digested and in what quality is digested. So if the speed is increasing, you lose information, and if you lose information, you lose concerning urban development, quality of urban development, because quality needs time. So there is a very simple knowledge in evolutionary theory. A system can only be stable if the bearing elements of the last level of evolution has been repeated at least one time. So it means one generation is needed to find out whether it was good or whether it was bad. And this is our problem, because the system is moving much faster than we are able to perceive their quality and their long-term sustainability. There is only one speed which fits to humankind. Humankind is an upright animal, walking in an upright position, the only speed he can perceive, and he can deal with it in a responsible way. As soon as we exceed this speed, we are going in troubles, and we have to reduce the information. Highways outside of the window are nothing else than the reduction of the variety and multifunctionality of information we get in a livable environment to the needs of the fast car drivers. And if we look what's happened here, or happened everywhere in the world, we try to catch time with speed, which is not possible at all. We destroy the space, we destroy the life, but we cannot catch time. For example, we pay today for 1 hour behind the steering wheel of a car by about 1 hour of lifetime, killed on the streets, directly or indirectly. Or we are very much fascinated by the Formula One race track, but we don't look a little bit through how much time it costs to prepare one race run. And if you calculate the lifetime spent to prepare one race run, you get an average speed of 26 centimeters an hour. So it is the fastest speed we have, the fastest speed we can watch, but the lowest speed in the system. And cities are systems. So if we adapt cities to the right speed, people feel well. Benelosa explained in a very colorful and strong word and explanations how, and everybody I think was touched by his explanation, the harmony between a city and the man. And the problem is that we have to find back to the harmony. between man and city. And this is the scale we need, and the spatial scale is also related to human scale. At the last intervention, this or before last intervention today, the space was mentioned. There was the space of very wide roads and the 6 meters. 6 meters is exactly the space of a room. This is the space of the people feel well, or even a bigger space with the right speed. So I'm coming now to some very practical problems. I have had some discussions concerning, we have so many people on this small scale, so we need motorways, for example. If I come to physical terms, motorways and car traffic eat up the space of the city. As soon as a car is moving, he need a lot of space. And if you have a limited amount of space, you create a congestion. Very simple. You don't need very much calculations. And already in the 60s, Ivan Illich, a philosopher, has calculated the amount of time people spend to buy, operate a car, or even the system. We have to take into account today the transport system of this kind of modes. And what it is coming out, the people would be able to walk the same distance if the transport system for a car. So it is, this is the real physical term. So behind all the fascinating thing concerning the high speeds, there is a physical and reality.
I mean, you rightly, for someone involved in the analysis of transport, mobility, and speed, focused literally on that issue. But the speed of urban growth that we're witnessing in this part of the world, and we will be witnessing elsewhere. When you presented right at the beginning that provocative chart which shows that Shanghai at the moment in terms of its efficiency and sustainability is
excellent,
relatively good.
Oh, it's excellent.
A good model, and we've talked about that. The fact that the city is growing so fast and that you here are intervening so quickly is a positive from point of view, from your point of view, potentially, or a negative? Could it actually?
It depends how you intervene, because you are intervening in many cases, maybe in violating the right scale. You can intervene very fast on the right scale, then not very mistakes will happen. But to intervene in the right scale, it is too difficult for most of the architects, because they are able to build single objects, and very few of them are able to build a human fabric. So I didn't wonder when the deputy mayor from London said, well, let the chaos go on. Because this is not the chaos. The chaos has, each kind of chaos has a certain order, and we don't understand it. So this means the system is too complicated to be understood, so maybe the chaos could be better. But we have some responsibility. The problem is, we are today digesting too much energy in the society. Cheap energy, which makes the chaos dangerous. I would totally agree with him if he has only people in the system. Then a certain order will appear very soon. But as soon as you fill in additional cheap fossil energy, then he can create really a very dangerous nuclear bomb.
Okay. Sophie, obviously the issue of speed in action.
What I find stimulating is to speak about the speed of change. And I think that we have been focusing a lot on the very visible. We have been talking a lot about the 7,000 high-rise towers that sprang in the downtown Shanghai. But I heard also another script in the meanwhile, which is which concerns the Chinese resiliency, the Chinese culture of the know-how, and the balance. This was repeated several times between this very speedy modernization and the time it takes to adjust to change. I think that we have not talked enough about the capacities of resistance of this culture, the invisible processes that continue, that express continuity slowly, incrementally, rather than abruptly. We have been told that there are still people who walk to their work or who use their bicycle. We have been talked about the vertical integration performed by families who apparently resist despite the two working parents. We have been told that urban structures remain intact and they are still very powerful. In other words, there is as much continuity as there is speed and change, and we should not forget it. Something we did not talk about, which usually comes into these conferences, is risk. We did not understand much about risk. In speed, you have certainly an element of risk to be taken. And what happens? I was thinking at one point about Bilbao. How in Bilbao, the developers thought, well, we don't have the budget, but let's count on luck. Let's count on risk, and maybe it will work. And it did work. And I would like to know what is happening here in that respect. Is there an, I suppose that there is an element of gamble also in the Chinese culture. How much gamble is taken on the on these this speed? We talked about fuzziness too, and this is also something I would like to understand more. Is it all programmed with precisely a certain timing to have things done, or is this fuzziness allowing time to take place to provide better quality of change?
But one thing, I mean, these are three questions which I'm not sure whether we're actually going to answer right now. These are questions which come out of this conference, of course, and that is correct. But just get off the fence a little bit.
Yes,
please. But on the issue that you were asking earlier today of the socially divided city, is your sense that actually the speed could exacerbate or help coagulate the city? I mean, what is your sense of what
you've heard?
Oh,
yes. My sense is that there is we were told that there was a goal concerning the elimination of differences, and yet we see that there is a practice of toleration for the widening of social differences, amplified by architecture and certainly amplified by speed.
Richard, can I turn to you and ask you to comment on that? I think
Well, I guess I would say to our, or raise two questions to our Chinese colleagues about the relation of speed and public realm. The first is a classic proposition in political thinking about democracy, which is that the slower that slowness is desirable in order to permit more democratic participation. That the faster the pace of development, the more exclusion of reflection, debate, and indeed understanding what the process is by the majority of people is likely to occur. This is, as I say, this is a classic proposition from John Locke to John Rawls in thinking about Western democracy. And you might want to reflect whether this applies to you or not. Has the pace, sheer pace of change, prevented you from having more democratic experience of change itself? My second question to you is really to ask, well, when we are talking about speed, we're talking about time. And time can be shaped in two ways. One is as an unbounded process, just more and more of the same, no matter how quickly it happens, just unfolds, versus time that is organized into events. In the history of American urbanism, time is an unbounded process was, for instance, in the development of American suburbs. They have no narrative shape to them. It is a process, sometimes goes very fast, sometimes that goes very slow, but there's no story to it. It's simply, it is change which is constantly unfurling. Versus the kind of event organized change that was embodied in the work of Robert Moses, the great planner of New York in the middle of the 20th century, for whom each planning act was seen as an event told to the city that had to be closed, that had to have a story around it when it ended. Moses began by building most of the highways that connect the center of New York to its peripheries. At a certain point, he stopped building them and then did something else. He began building schools at those peripheries. It was a kind of planning that he claimed, although he was a very forceful and dogmatic and autocratic man, was democratic because he staged growth as a series of events which people could understand as stories that began and ended. And I guess my question to you is about the form that you want to experience time. Can you tell a story about the future of when, for instance, this kind of growth will stop and something else will start? Or is the time in which you're living in building a city one of a kind of process without that kind of shape? In my own view, good city planning is always a narrative. It always tells a story because those events which start, are fulfilled, and then stop give people a way to understand what has been made for them.
Dan, do you think that if cities are built around a narrative, that the speed of change makes that narrative impossible to construct?
A coffee this morning, thinking about narratives in cities, and two thoughts have popped up. Well, one, the idea of size. Is there some magic number that makes a city what it is, that puts it on the top table? Does one have to be a city of 10 million people to tell a certain kind of story? And the other is that you've got to build high to get noticed. That you build the skyscrapers, as I said yesterday, and the world will come. And no matter how smart we are or think we are, we're all seduced by this image that we sit there drinking our cocktails on the roof of the Bund and look at the high-rises across the river as if it was some kind of tribal fireplace, watching these amazing sights that kind of seduce us and tell us that we are somewhere. And yet we know these things are like hamburgers because they're bad for us, but we want the sugar rush. And when we get to the ground floor of those skyscrapers, we find nothing but emptiness.
Wang Qi, I would like to, in a way, come to you, given that Dan Sudrick has mentioned both size and height, and we're talking about speed. And both you and Shang Qi seem to be extremely involved in these processes, either fully aware or less fully aware of the implications as we tend to perceive them from the West at the moment. Could you comment on the impact of speed? Also, perhaps picking up the issue that Herman used at the very beginning, that you need time to deliver quality. Wait one moment, Wang Qi.
Can I hear?
Did you understand my question? The question,
please. 我们今天这个论坛，我们的一个特点呢，就是大家的意见都各有各的意见，观点不一样，但是。关于这个 城市发展的速度问题呢，我是非常赞成霍曼先生的发言的。我认为速度呢，如果牺牲了质量，这个速度，这个后果是非常非常不好的。其实，在中国现在发展一提到速度呢，一定和中国的现在这个发展经济发展呢，都会谈到这个比例了。比如说，曾经是西方国家200年的发展的结果呢，我们现在可能20年、30年都达到了。 当然，从某种角度来讲，它有它的积极意义的一面，或者它有它的正面的东西。比如说，很多你弯路不用走了，尤其现在很多新的技术，尤其互联网，让你可以大大的缩短时间。但另一方面，我们会看到，它确实有它的时间是不能超越的。你快速的发展，它会带来很多很多问题。在中国现在就很有意思，关于速度问题呢，实际上现在中国有非常不同的两种声音。 比如说，中央就认为现在速度是过快的，因为他们从整个国家的角度、资源的配置、能源的浪费等等吧，认为现在这个速度是过快的，所以一定要压。但是我们知道，还有另外一种声音，就是地方政府，实际上也包括我们有影响力的上海、北京啊、广州其他一些城市，各级地方政府都认为他们的速度不快，所以这是在。 在中国现在实际上是两种声音的，他们都认为说，总的来讲中国的速度快，但是我们这个地方不快，我们这地方还有发展。我是搞企业的，我就很想谈，就是我的企业发展速度上，我的体会是什么？应该说是在这个12年前，就上个世纪的1993年，中国因为是。 这个速度问题呢，进行了宏观调控，当时各级政府呢和中央政府也是观点不一样的。中央政府当时朱镕基主政是非常强硬的进行这个宏观调控，所以各级地方政府都非常反感，希望呢朱镕基总理呢尽早下台。当然了，如果是按选票来讲，可能当时总理是当时就要下台了。但中国这个，因为当时它还不是这种民主化，所以当时就中央强硬的执行这个。 调控，那我来谈谈，就是我的企业受的什么影响？因为我的企业认为当时速度太快，所以我们在它调控之前呢，我们从92年就开始进行自身的调控，降慢速度。其结果呢，这个结果就到了1998年5年之后，我们主动放慢速度，这个企业的增长反而在这个5年的调控期间，其他企业在抱怨的时候呢，我们的增长速度最快。 75%的速度增长，就是5年之后，我们发现我们怎么成了中国最大的房地产企业了。就是你说你要放慢速度，你讲究质量，其结果呢，你会发展非常有后劲的发展。实际到现在，我们从上市的70家房地产公司当中，我们还排在第一位。去年，我们认为这个房地产太热了，我们又主动来调整我们自己，所以今年。 这个中央政策说太热了，强硬的制定，我们发现我们受的影响非常小，所以我认为，如果不讲究有质量的增长，这种以速度为前来讲，这会有问题的。当然，速度非常重要，所以关键来讲最后呢，就是一个节奏，怎么把握好节奏，在适当的速度下。所以现在呢，中央提出的口号呢，就有质量的增长，科学的发展观，我认为是比较迎合健康长期发展的。
The issues of dealing with development in local areas where at the moment there are fishing people whose lifeblood life comes from fishing, their fishing villages, and you were expressing concern about the issues of relocation and the problems that that might raise. How would you respond then to Richard Sennett's comment right now about the notion that in effect to build a sort of democratic process you need time? Is that something which, given that you raised it yesterday, I'd like to bring it back because it's a very interesting issue for us to understand. And Shang-Chi, I'm going to ask you the same question.
Thank you. 这个提到关于这个速度和公共空间的问题。我第一个认为呢，我认为这个速度呢对公共空间实际上是两面性的。刚才讲了一个说可
not space, the, sorry, not public space.
啊，我们这是公共空间，我们是我的理解就是这个民主化的。在中国来讲，应该说是还是一种这种传统观念来讲，还是这种就是叫贤君，就是希望这个有出现一个好皇帝，所以这是老百姓的一种普遍的一种情绪。所以一旦他们发展他们这个的民主诉求呢，我觉得在中国呢，它还有一个相当长的时间的阶段，而且呢是13亿人口当中呢有8亿是农民，所以在中国的来谈到民主呢，我认为呢还是中产阶级的经营政治呢比把整个是民主让老百姓来享受民主我觉得更好一些。比如说这个中上层的这样的中产阶层上呢来进行一定的民主，对于这个更多的老百姓呢，更多的还是一种来引导。如果说是让在中国进行普遍的这种选举，给他们的这样的自治呢，我觉得这个问题是很大的。这有两个问题，一个中国呢，它是基本上是族群这种来管理的，就是在更多的农村呢，是很多是哪一个姓比较大姓的这个血缘的关系，这样他来在这个村里主导整个他来进行治理，而这个治理这方面是可以说是相当糟糕的。所以你往往最后给了民主的结果呢，最后实际现在结果是和你的想法呢是相反的，实际上这和中国的东方的这种专制长时间的历史啊，我认为这是有关系的。所以要谈到民主呢，在中国恐怕还是要更谨慎一些，也可能最后适得其反。
Shang-Chi。I'm trying to link the notion of speed. You know perfectly well what the question is.
I think there's people talk about speed and quality and speed versus democracy. I want to just clarify one thing is that what does quality mean? You know, does quality mean durability or does quality mean plentiness? If we talk about quality of today, in terms of durability, we certainly are. There's no comparison of whatever we produce today versus, let's say, 50 years ago. But if we were to talk about plentiness, everyone would agree that if you go down to a supermarket today, the plentiness, the varieties of product is probably 100 times of 20 years ago. So, it's important to talk about, what is the quality we talk about? And I also think that we live in a time where people don't want durability. People, if quality means durability, and that's exactly what people don't want. I give an example of fashion. In the old days, one Gucci design bag can sell for 20 years, no problem. If you just put Gucci label, you sell it again and again everywhere in the world. Today, a Gucci bag one design cannot last for more than 3 months. So every design, fashion design house needs to have a quarterly, four times, right, fashion shows, right, season. And I remember reading an interview on Tom Ford, and he said, people asked him, what do you think about having four fashion shows every year versus one? And he said, if you think whether a clothes would last for as long as 1 year. Yes, we only need one fashion show because a clothes can last certainly more than 1 year. But in a reality, we need four fashion show because people don't go to your shop to shop if you don't have new products, if you don't have, and people want to shop. So, in reality is that we live in an age that
Shang-Chi, you sell buildings, houses.
Well, I'll come to that. I'll come to that. I'll come to that soon. I'll come to that now. today we sell, you know, I thought I was in the industry of building something that would last for hundreds of years. I have been proved that I was totally wrong. My customers move on average every 2 years.
Wow.
And if we don't come up with anything new on a 6 month basis, no one comes into our sales office. So even, you know, that's what I want to say, that, you know, when people talk about speed and quality, it's like, you don't have to worry about quality, because everything recycles much faster today. If you want people to move on, you know, along the social ladder, you know, as in, you know, as GDP grows 9% every year, you know, people move on, you know, move up the ladder of the society, then you need the speed. Because, you know, if I don't move out of my apartment, who comes, you know, the guy who wants to buy my apartment for a cheaper price has to wait. So it's only when I vacate, he moves in. When he vacates, and the one next to him moves in. So this is how the society works, or in my opinion. That's talking about quality and speed. I also think that on a social issue on democracy, is precisely because of the speed where we are today. That means that you have almost no time for any authority to establish itself. You know, before you establish yourself as authority, it moves on to next authority. So in many ways, this speed has prevented what everyone thinks this country is, socialism, you know, dictatorial. In reality, you know, I have lived in many cities around the world. This is, there is no other city is as chaotic as China, Chinese cities. And if chaos means democracy, or means freedom at least, right? I mean, someone talk about fussiness of the possibilities, and this is a way of creating possibilities. And I think that perhaps it's that I have a trouble with the term democracy. If democracy means one person, one vote, then we get to the point of what Mr. Wang Shi made the comment, is that we live in a society, we live in a country where 70% of our population live in the rural area. And then we know that Chinese society, if you take Taiwan, for example, it's one person, one vote. The turnout rate for people to go for to vote for the president was close to 90%. So for sure that with democracy in this country, we will get the rural population would have the highest vote. And I think we probably won't even have the city if that is going to be the case.
You raised this key point which connects the last two contributions, and I still have in mind the notion that somehow the speed of things has something to do with the process through by which they're not only accepted but that they're also implemented. And Jerry, you talked at the very beginning about the different institutions of implementations of power. What is the effect of speed on that?
When I hear my many of the Chinese colleagues talk, there's this utter urgency that's being pushed from the outside. There's the urgency of consumer demand. There's the urgency that we need to develop our society. There's the urgency of population growth. We're going to have to find places for them. There's the urgency of finishing our port. There's the urgency of finishing our airport. We need to move ahead. It's urgent, urgent, urgent. You don't understand. We have no choice. We have to keep going. This sense of internal desire for this feeling of being pushed to have to move forward. When I hear this kind of talk, I have two questions. One is, when any people say all these things, I want us to question what any of them mean. We need to be modern. Well, what is modern? And how can we think about what the modern is? We need to develop economically. Yes, but what does that mean? How do we organize development economically? We need to house a population. Correct. where do we house them and how do we house them? So all these questions are much more open to discussion than the sense of urgency suggests. And then the second thing is, where does this list come from? This list of demands and urgency. And the answer is that it's not coming from individual, from invisible forces. It's not. There are lots of people who want economic development and are seeking to push economic development of a particular kind. And a lot of the organizational and democratic issues are about questioning the agenda. So why is population moving in the cities? It's not, a lot of it has to do with agricultural policy in this country. It's not just accident. We're attracting them, and their policies are moving them out. Institutional organization is generating a list. So if we question the meaning of the list and the list itself, I think we would slow down. We would rethink these things, and I think I must say the idea that the democracy has something to do with the presence or absence of rural people is something I just don't understand. Rural people can vote too. So I think we have to question what these invisible demands are.
I think, can we take those two, the first two questions anyway, and ask the Robert Moses of Shanghai we know you are, and it's important to think of you in that role, after all. You know. No, but, you know, it's easy to talk about these figures in the past rather than the present, but ultimately the decisions made by you and your team have exactly the same impact. But could you focus just momentarily on these two questions that, you know, where does the list come from and why? The list of points that that Jerry Froob just made, these last two questions, there's a series of sort of aspirations for change. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I prefer to talk about more on the speed, because it's, from my understanding, what the problem we face this moment, mostly caused from the speed. We have a high speed, then we have lots of problem from the high speed. But from my understanding, the high speed is also necessary. I think the speed is, the question of speed is also a question of the democracy. The most important democracy, human right, is the right of development. It's no sense if we sit here to talk about this when the national GDP is less than $100, the average living space is less than 2 square meters. No sense to talk anything here. So that's the most important democracy than any sense of democracy for votes. And now, of course, that doesn't mean we are not faced the problem from the high speed. We know the speed and the problems from the speed. And not only the people here, but also people from the world. And then, from my understanding, the best way to solve this problem is not to slow down the speed, but high-speed thinking. We never know how to high-speed thinking. We're always thinking before doing. Now we have to learn how to thinking after doing, or thinking with doing. I don't know how, but probably it's the only way we should take. You cannot say stop development, let's think about it. Then give you a right way, then you develop. The one generation is very limited, several decades for one life. Nobody have the right to say, give all this development right to next generation. We just live in this situation. Nobody have the right. So nobody can stop this high-speed development. The only thing we should do is try to solve the problem caused from the speed as small as possible. I don't know how many problems we faced. It's my understanding we more face of the problem of the urban development, urban planning. Probably there are lots of problems from history, social, economic, natural environment. We have all, we know all of these problems, and all the people maybe can only solve or think one or two of them. And then let's together, probably we can solve some of them. We're never sure, we never know we can solve all the problems. Actually, tracing back to the history of a human being, never, every generation never solve all the problems of their generation. So we only need to do is try our best to solve as much as possible these problems. And probably finally, this city, in because there's a lot of people talking about not only speed but also the culture, probably finally we can find this is the right way to create our own culture. After one or two generations, or even more generations, the people later will say, oh, that generation in 21st century, quite smart. They know a new way, which the human being never know before. And then they create a new city, new life, new culture.
Thank you for that. I think your very, very clear statement, in a way, cuts across many of the questions that have been lingering in the air, certainly. Clear statement of your linking the policy of the city with your sense of what is a fundamental democratic right, and that is to do with economic development. Dieter, I left you nearly at the end because I know that in asking you to talk about speed and your interest in the world of labor and workplace, you may have become a convert of the urban age quicker than we expected.
Yes, well, I think it's real interesting to see this accelerated transformation process. And on the first glance, it's evident there is a really dramatic speed and change in economy, in social processes, in built environment. And normally in our cultural vision, speed mostly is linked with strength, with power, but actually, I think if we are honest and look on ourselves, we run very fast when we are anxious, when we have problems. So I think we have to take it very serious that part of the speed is just a problem, you know, the accumulation of problems. And that's one point we should see. The second point is, when I look now in my field, I was a little bit studying or trying to study to understand. So I see that there is only very, very small friction of the labor market, which is really a high-speed labor market. And the rest is a slow, very slow blocked labor market. And the same is with the traffic. We have actually a slow society. And so what we have to understand is the main problem is not the hyperspeed. The problem which we are confronted is the plurality of temporalities. That means very, very different speeds. And the key difference, that was the notion of the clash of the hyper-urban and the hyper-rural. You know, we have a deux vitesses. Une société à deux vitesses. A society completely separated with two temporalities. And here I come to a key problem, and that was maybe for me the most interesting thing to learn here. Not to look on speed and time, but to look on a new conception of space. And there we have, if we're talking about space, I don't mean the physical space or, you know, just, you know, I'm speaking of the social space, the space of society. And I think the main mean to handle this different temporalities is the space. Take the first problem, the clash of hyper-urban, hyper-rural. The solution for this extremely different of time and history is a speciality of citizenship. The question of the cuckoo system, which are one of our main problems. That means you're only citizen, and even they have taken the notion native, if you are born in the space of the city. If you are not born in the space of the city, you belong to a completely other society. And it, you know, you made it clear why it is so. For the difference of development, also extremely, between, on the one hand, Shanghai, Peking, Canton, etc., and the vast land of central China. And we may like it or not, the so-called floating population, which actually are not floating, they are stable, they don't have mobility. But they are the result out of these two temporalities. This is the negative form of speciality. That means the power to control, to keep the problems some, you know, closed. But the other thing which was much more fascinating for me was to learn the space in the sense of citizen, citiness. That means the space is a medium of intersection of differences. And that's absolutely fascinating. This morning I was walking from the hotel to this place here. And I passed the most different places. So as Westerner, I had the feeling I'm walking through the kitchen, I'm walking through the living room, I'm walking through the bathroom of the people. But there is not this separation of private and public space. There is a very complex interaction of urban spaces. And the most important thing is that to understand how this society does function, you know, with these differences. And I think that is the complexity of the social space of the city, the superposition of different spaces, which gives enormous flexibility, and what I've tried to work out in the labor market, the multiplicity of working lives and living.
Let's just pursue this theme a little bit more. I know Frank and Wei have comments on this, I think. If it's on this, let's keep on that. Frank?
Yes, this is working, isn't it?
Go.
Okay, very, very briefly. I just want to remind everyone that buildings aren't made out of concrete.
Yeah, it's working.
Are concrete, glass, and steel. They're made out of time. And the same applies to cities. And the biggest mistake you can make is to solve a 5-minute problem with a 1,000-year solution, or vice versa. And I think if we layered our understanding of cities in terms of temporality and time horizons, it would make the problems of leadership, responsibility, and control much easier. In other words, we are far too project-based in this situation, and we need to think about the units of analysis in a more theoretical way in order to solve the practical problem.
I mean, it was very interesting to hear that Ma before say that the expertise in the profession of architecture at the moment is becoming how to do things quickly and efficiently and not worry too much about theory, and it's interesting that you say that. Wait, on this point, and then we'll come to Enrique and Professor Zhu.
Very quickly, share my experience, personal experience. I would not say that speed is necessary, but given my experience in the government, you know, I really don't think, you know, anyone or any city couldn't stop this faster, you know, going train, you know, after the nation like totally frozen for development more than like half century. So it's kind of lots of energy on the, you know, there. But the one thing I would like mention that actually there's something, you know, about democracy naturally happen. Nowadays the community the residents is actually very kind of a wake up, you know, they have association and they even hire some experts to read the building code. And so if there's even one square meter of Greenland being bought, they will complain. And so when I just came back, we talked quite a lot about the transparency of the planning. It's not going to happen, you know, for if the developer can, you know, like, hang on for 1 year. However, my feeling is that nowadays the private sector actually become very powerful. There's some, you know, there's kind of a misunderstanding that, like, the government is very powerful guiding this train going. Actually, I think the private sector plays a very important role. And in terms of the urban planning, you know, I believe that there's some fundamental weakness and problem with the planning code, you know. For example, if the developer is very big, if they want, they buy a 1 million square meter, you know, construction, they can build a city within city. So they become the one talk about the urban planning.
Okay,
on the other hand, if this developer just one sentence, is very small, they build only one building, they still are required to build 40% of open space. So in that case, on one side, you know, all the open space was chopped to small pieces. There's no, you know, big park. On the other hand, the urban, you know, continuity being damaged. So in that case, I think, you know,
I'm going to stop you there because it's a theme we agree and we've rehearsed. Sasko, on that point.
Return to the point that Dieter made about the importance of intersecting different velocities. I don't think we should reify speed as speed belongs to the modern sector. Speed belongs to it. And I think, for instance, critical components of the informal economy can intersect with the leading sectors because they have a similar velocity. This goes against all our notions of what the informal economy is. But the reason part of that informal economy belongs to advanced capitalism is because it can deliver the speed that a more traditional standardized unit or a government unit would not, because it would bureaucratic time is slower. So the only thing I want to say is that speed should not be reified in sense of advanced sectors have it and what looks like backward sectors don't have it. And the critical issue, I don't think it's a problem to have different velocities. The problem is if they are never intersecting, if they run on parallel walls, then you create rigidities, you reify inequalities, etc. Just a little point.
Shang-Chi, we were nodding there. What, you want to comment on that?
Okay, she gave me, and I was going to refer to something she said, by the way. So, first, I just like to say that Gitam from India or I from Colombia would love to have the speed that they have here, because the waste, the suffering, the human waste, the many brilliant, here I have heard several times from some the Dean of Architecture, for example, that he could not take as many jobs as were demanded of him. In Colombia, what I see is a terrible waste of many brilliant people who do not have work or not enough creative opportunities to do that. However, there is some very interesting thing that was said by Shang-Chi, and that is that if the rural people would vote, there would not be perhaps cities. And I think maybe the backwardness in rural areas is a necessity for the speed of the cities. Let me explain. If you have a company, and you have several products, 10 products, and you don't have good cost accounting, two minutes, then you will, in some products you may be losing money, and in some other products you may be making money. And if you don't have good cost accounting, you may end up taking the money out of the more profitable ones in order to subsidize the poor ones. At this time in society, the most productive people in China are in the cities, the most educated, the most productive. So if you take money out of cities and invested in the rural areas, that will have a cost in terms of economic development, because you are going to take money out of the most productive areas and send it to the least productive people. This may be a necessity in terms of democracy, in terms of politics, in terms of social necessity, but clearly that will have a cost. That will be taking money out of your products where you are making a profit with the most educated people to bring it to. So this is a quandary that I don't know, it has to be solved. And also, just one more point, I think there is also a perception that aggravates this issue, because I think here I find in China, which is very shocking to me after this country was communist for so long, that we have almost gone overboard to the other side, that we perceive that it's very necessary to take very good care of the upper income people, because those are the foreign investors, the top managers, the highly qualified people. And so we almost have to have a social policy that is to really to see how we tend to them so that they are satisfied and happy, because that is perceived as being crucial for economic development. And so if they have a traffic jam, we have to make an elevated highway for them, if whatever is necessary. So, but I just like to emphasize the difference between that maybe the backwardness of rural areas is perhaps a necessity for economic development, because otherwise it's economic, if we would transfer resources from the rural, urban areas to the rural areas, would certainly have a cost in terms of the growth rate of the economy.
This is the subject of another series of conferences. I mean, it's a fundamental issue, but I think we're careful not to open an issue that we can't, can only touch very superficially. Professor Zuo, you've been here and listened to your colleagues from the West make judgments on issues of speed and change, and you've organized a number of workshops over the last week for many of us. What have you learned anything that's been said in these 2 days that you find that makes you maybe rethink some of the issues to do with the speed of change, or even more generically?
I want to make three quick points about the speed. One is, I think why China, why Shanghai and other Chinese cities can go at such a high speed. I think we need some explanation for this. I think there are two possible reasons. One is the land institutions. In China, all the urban land is owned by the government, and all the rural lands are owned by the rural collectives. And the government can easily take land from the rural collectives. So it is easier for Chinese local governments to build roads, to make new residential areas. I think this is a possibility why China can go fast. The other very important issue is the role of the local governments. I think the local governments in China are more actively involved in economic development, and that there are serious competition between Chinese cities and between even within Shanghai, between different districts, and the power of development was decentralized within Shanghai. So the districts in Shanghai can approve buildings 18 stories and below 18 stories. So it's very powerful for the district government. So there's competition, which necessitates the very fast development. Otherwise, the leaders of the districts will be removed. So that I think that's two explanations. The second point I want to make is that in future, the speed will be slowed down, because the speedy development, there are some mechanism to slow down the development built in the process of development, because once you build new buildings in some place, the available land is, the supply of land is declining, and once the city expansion took a lot of land, agricultural land, then the newly available land will decline, supply will decline. I think maybe we can explore some buildings built in 1980s or even 1990s down, but that's only a few cases. But for most buildings, we'll stand there for hundreds of years, so we cannot redo it. I think in future we can see that the change in Shanghai will gradually slow down. Eventually, the city is more mature, like you know, London, Paris. The last point I want to make is the concept of quality. The perception of quality has been changing, you know. So people, you know, change their idea about the, you know, about the city. In 1980s, I think each Shanghai household, they have a very little, you know, space. So the quality means spatial, you know, more space. So, but in 90s, in 1990s, I think people believe, you know, the Western, you know, model is it means quality. You know, they don't care the, you know, energy consumption. They don't care, so they use a lot of private car. They thought private car, private transportation is the symbol of wealth. But now I think people are rethinking how to combine the Western culture with the traditional culture, how to make buildings more energy saving, how to make the cities livable for different, you know, social status, as a social strata in Shanghai. So I think that the perception of quality is changing. So we are trying to do something to follow the new, you know, concept of the quality.
Thank you very much for that. I think we should draw this session to an end, and what you just talk about, this sort of changing perceptions of quality, in trying to sum up in my mind one experience which brings these very diverse interpretations of the impacts of speed, i.e. there are impacts rather than there aren't. That's already a small revelation for us, certainly from my point of view, compared to where I was 2 weeks ago and thinking about this, was a group of us going, as Johannes Dell mentioned before, to this beautiful new town built at extreme rapidity. And I'm leaving out all issues to do with style, architecture. It's just there. It has a high-quality environment. The level of the detailing is rather superb. I wish we could do that sort of thing in London. The interiors of the show apartments we saw made something that Terence Conran might design look a bit sort of dated. But there was no one there. And Johannes Dell made it very clear that the reason was because, and correct me if I'm wrong here, that the organization, the state organization, the public organization which had funded and commissioned the project, had, and I'm now using the word provocatively, forgotten to put in the electricity and the water. 80% of the flats had been sold, but there was no desire, no speed to inhabit the space. So one really needs to question what part of the process has been accelerated and why. And I think I'm going to sort of leave that there.